subjected to the rules of American capitalism. And while the USA has undoubtedly made massive profits from this war, it has also taken major losses, as in many ways, what has happened with sanctions has backfired against Uncle Sam. And if we look at the so-called American economy, inflation is at an all-time high. It went up 9.1%, which is the biggest yearly increase since 1981. And while, of course, the elites in the capitalist imperialist economy are making massive profits, it can also be said and argued that Russia has been winning this clash with U.S. capitalist imperialism. This materially counteracts the capitalist imperialist goal of complete world domination and control, and it shows us again that a multipolar world is here. And in the face of this development of this new world order, the so-called United States military is in a recruiting crisis and is struggling to meet its quotas. This has led to the U.S. military dropping GED and high school graduation requirements being waived, as well as some other requirements. And people are even denying the large sign-on bonuses of the U.S. military. And this might be seen as a sign of weakening U.S. nationalism and perhaps an emerging anti-war movement that is starting in the belly of the imperialist beast. But whatever happens, it's very clear. It's very clear that a new world order is being birthed as we speak. And it provides hope for oppressed people everywhere suffering from the imperialist beast of the so-called United States of America. But one thing must be for certain is that imperialism itself will not self-destruct. It must be defeated and it must be crushed. We are always our own liberators. This is Power to the People.
Thank you for staying with us over the years. We hope to bring you more interesting and exciting shows that will motivate you to think and help you see what those in power try to cover up.
That's a wrap for this week. Thank you for joining me on We the People. I'm your host, Bahman Uray.
Thank you for staying with us. I'm your host, Mila Javamardi.
Well, that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Aryan, and make sure to tune in again next week when we return with another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint,
a critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and my guest speakers as always, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
The pleasure is all mine. Sayyid Abdullah, greetings to you too. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Well, it's from two episodes ago that we were criticized the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears, featuring stars from Hollywood like Judith Dench and Ali Fazal, to just name a few. And of course, we haven't come to the end of the criticism, so we have to actually pick up where we left off and continue along the same line of criticism or the critical review of such a movie. But before that, let's take a listen to a short part of the movie, Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stephen Frears, and then we'll be back with his questions. So don't go away.
Lady Churchill was absolutely scandalized, sitting next to a servant and a Hindu to boot.
The Munshi is a Muslim scholar and knows the Quran off by heart. And for your information, he's a servant no longer. He's to be given a staff of his own.
What do you mean, a staff?
The little fat one.
Oh, this is absurd. Letters, invitations to supper. You're treating him like a member of the family.
No, I like Abdul. Lady Churchill had better get used to the fact, as the Munshi is coming on holiday with us, as a member of the household.
You can't take a Muslim to Florence.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammad Jad, the host of this program, and Brother Yasser and Said Abdullah, my guest speakers. You just listened to a part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears, which we try to actually criticize. Said Abdullah, I'm talking about this part that Queen's son, Bertie, advises his mother not to sit and mingle with Abdul as a Muslim. Mm-hmm. But the Queen also wants to take him as members of the household to Florence, to a party probably in Florence. Why all this hatred against Muslims in the Buckingham Palace?
It is not a surprise why they hate Muslims. I mean, they've been fighting Muslims as far as they can go.
Mm-hmm.
You take it all the way back to the Crusaders. They had this hatred towards the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Their number one enemy back in the day was Islam. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, even talking back way back, like after Islam started and Islam made it to Spain, and then, you know, Islam overtook Europe and stuff like that. And then the British and they started fighting back for the Crusaders and what have you. So that started the hate towards Islam. And then when you had the Ottoman Empire,
mm-hmm.
it didn't make anything any better. And they had hatred towards Muslims. So it is in their blood that they needed to eradicate Islam and Muslims, and mm-hmm. they invaded the Muslim countries. They invaded Iraq. They invaded the Arabian Peninsula. They divided them because the Arabian Peninsula back in the day was just one piece,
mm-hmm.
and we had no kings and queens. It was just like from Iraq, Syria, Palestine, all the way to Yemen. It was just one piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
The British, they came and they divided into pieces. They cut into pieces because they thought, well, on the long run, we could only control these people if we divide and conquer, which is a Machiavellian
theme, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's from the beginning they had this hatred towards Muslims. And obviously anything that has an Islamic notion to it, it was hated. When it came to the Indians, though, Indians were looked at as a second, not even a second class. They were looked at like e-servants, just mm-hmm. someone that's a peasant
mm-hmm.
with the real sense of the word.
Yes.
Right? No, so could you imagine that you look at the queen and she has a peasant with her. He's a Muslim and he's very close to her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we're not sure. I mean, himself, the king, he burnt all documents that relates to his mom and Abdul Karim. So nothing was left. Or he tried as much as he can to eradicate whatever is left. So we're not sure if there was like a romantic relationship involved or not. So to him, it was something very upsetting to see his mother was a Muslim,
yes.
with an Indian, with someone who's low class, someone who has nothing,
mm-hmm.
and yet he is in the palace and then she's treating him as royalty. And it's said that even Abdul Karim himself, he's the one who pushed the idea of knighthood mm-hmm. to the queen.
Yeah.
So he can see that he had influence on her as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she would spend a lot of times with him alone and stuff like that. So that was a worry point for the king.
Yeah.
What if my mother God forbid, decides to become a Muslim?
Mm.
What if she decides to withdraw from India, for example?
And at the end of the movies, you see what happens to all the documents, all the photos, all the signatures or pieces of documents that were given. Even that small ring, actually, which was given to Abdul, by the queen.
Yeah. So they, like I said, so they were trying to eradicate everything because of the hatred that they had towards Islam and towards Muslims.
They didn't know even from the beginning that he was not a Muslim. They thought he was a Hindu or something.
They thought he was from a Hindustan, as they call it. He was a Hindu. He wasn't a Muslim. But regardless of whether he's a Muslim or not a Muslim, they had this issue with Indians themselves because India was a colony. India was under their control. India was causing them a lot of trouble, a lot of problems. Mm. And they were sucking the life out of India in order to fund their class in Britain.
Yes.
So the last thing they ever wanted is to have Indians in their own homes with the queen herself.
Yes, exactly.
So, but, you know, they yasha'unu Allahu yasha'.
Okay, thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears. And then we'll be back with his questions, so stay with us.
I think he met his position. I think he was rather alarmed he had such a prominent role in the household.
But of course Abdul has a prominent role in the household. He is my munshi.
But he's an Indian, Your Majesty.
I'm aware of that.
Given current sensitivities in the subcontinent, Your Majesty, the Prime Minister was concerned that it might be sending the wrong message.
I should have thought it was a jolly good message.
But he's a Muslim, Your Majesty.
Precisely. We owe them so much, do we not? For their role in the mutiny, for example.
The mutiny, Your Majesty?
Yes, for the help they gave us with the Hindus.
But the mutiny was a Muslim-led revolt, Your Majesty.
You sure?
Of course. The Muslim soldiers revolted when it was rumored that their rifles were greased with pork fat.
Really?
The Grand Mufti himself put out a fatwa against you personally, Your Majesty, and Muslim soldiers murdered over 2,000 British personnel.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammed Jah, the host of this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasir, my guest speakers, in fact, trying to help me actually criticize the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stephen Frears, produced in 2017. Brother Yasir, you know, I'm talking about this part of the movie. All the personnel and politicians alike in the palace are trying hard to convince the queen against Abdul by mentioning the mutiny in India involving killing some British soldiers and a fatwa issued by a Muslim scholar against the queen herself. What do we know about the mutiny? The movie or they try to display it as if Muslims started it.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. With regards to the revolt that may have been alluded to in the movie, it was the Indian Revolt of 1857. And again, it's very unlikely that the Queen had ignorance of what was actually happening. End of the day, reports would have come to her continuously.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It wouldn't be something that, it just happened out of the blue in some part of the world that she's the Empress of, and she wasn't getting reports.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, as you would know, that the military services, any service in the United Kingdom is known as Her Majesty's, or right now His Majesty's Royal Service, or whatever, Royal Army, Royal Navy, Royal Post Office, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Right, so in this instance, like, the mutiny was actually a joint thing between those of India, so the Muslims and the Hindus coming together to try and get the British out. And it was the last of the Mughal Empire's stance. So the Mughal Empire being obviously a Muslim, sometimes, you know, an Islamic kind of emperor who kind of joined forces with some of those who are Hindu and of the higher. As we know, in India, they have this caste system of Brahmins and then going down. So that of these came together. So what, again, we must understand, and something we need to tell our dear listeners, that history is always written by the victors.
Yeah.
There's something important to realize.
Exactly, yeah.
Like history and what happened and what is not happening is something that is very difficult. History is a very cruel subject. A lot is left out. A lot is written by those who see the event in a different way or want to show the event in a different way. It's something also to keep in mind.
Mm. So, I would say that history is usually written by friends and foes.
Friends and foes. So again, you'll
the
have
friends actually praise it, and the foes write it against it.
So, history is one of those things.
Yeah.
So it says, like, you know, 6,000 British soldiers died. It seems like a large amount, but when you compare it to the 800,000 Indians, both Muslim, Hindu, who died as well, it, you know. And the British obviously were victorious in that thing, obviously, because they remained as the colonizers for India for a very long time until the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like 100 years later on still. If this happened in 57 until the 40s, when the British eventually divided India into India and Pakistan and, well, apparently left them to their own means. You know, 100 years later on, they still remained. And they were obviously, those who revolted were put to the sword.
Yes.
You know, so it's not something that, like in the movie, it shows ignorance, but I feel that it's very unlikely that there was ignorance on this part.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Yasser. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Don't go away.
When I was young, I used to long for death. Now, when there is nothing to live for, I cling to life with every breath. I'm scared, Abdul.
Don't be scared. Listen, little drop. Give yourself up without regret, and in return you will gain the ocean. Give yourself away, and in the great sea you will be secure. Rumi.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. We are still criticizing the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stephen Frears, produced in 2017. Sayyid Abdullah, I want to ask you a question. This is the last question that I would ask of you related to this movie Victoria and Abdul. And this is again related to somehow a very important concept, which is discussed in great length by existential philosophers, that the one that I asked Brother Yasser in the previous program was about the meaninglessness of life. And this one is related to death, that we all have to actually experience sooner or later. I'm talking about that part that the queen is at her deathbed asking for Abdul. She was afraid to die, and Abdul consoles her by quoting Rumi, or Maulavi, the Persian poet, "Listen, little drop, give yourself up without regret, and in return you will gain the ocean. Give yourself away, and in the great sea you will be secure." This piece of poem, said Abdullah, roughly means that don't be scared of death, because it might be better for you on the other side or in the next world. Another important theme in human life that is also reiterated by existential philosophers, as I said earlier, of course, all religions try to somehow brace or prepare humans for death and the other worlds. What do you think?
Death is a part of life. Death is inevitable. We can't avoid it. According to the words of Elon Musk, he said death is essential because if people don't die, the mentalities will live with them too.
Mm.
So in order for us to have a new mentalities, we need new brains. So we need to get rid of the old ones. That's one of the messages of death. So the death itself, like I said, it's a process of life. But everyone, by the time they reach their deathbed, like the queen herself, obviously their life will flash before them and they can see what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So she had, especially herself, she had all the rights to be scared, because after all the bloodshed that she caused and after all the killing that was done under her name and after all the atrocities committed against mankind under the name of the Queen, she has to answer for. So Allahu Alam what she was witnessing just before her death, like what kind of, but the way they made it sound as if death, like when he was giving that poem from Rumi, shouldn't be given to a person like the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be given to a person, a normal person like me and you, who has not committed anything towards the humanity, to put them at ease and to make them, you know, go to sleep in peace. But with her, I would tell her, dude, get ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Brother Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, the Movie Critique Program on IRIB English Radio. In which we try to criticize the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stefan Frears, produced in 2017. Thank you for listening to us with another movie and the criticism of that movie. We bid you farewell. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
I'm 81 years of age and have almost a billion citizens. I've been in office 62 years, making me the longest serving monarch in history. Have we finished?
Abdul, you will travel to England.
To the royal household. You will present the Queen with a ceremonial coin.
Whatever you do, you must not look at Her Majesty.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin wa bihi nasta'in wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatul Sajjadiyya. We have been discussing the eighth supplication of this prayer manual, and that is on the dua of Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam when seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions. We are still discussing the first verse of this beautiful supplication, and that is when Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam starts seeking refuge of Allah from evil traits. And in our previous session, we mentioned an outline of how the traits are formed in the human soul. What is the phenomena of the formation of the evil traits in the soul in general.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
a very important point that we would like to also point out to is that here, notice that, you know, when it comes to changing the traits of a person, usually the human being sees himself as an independent person in doing so. For example, he will try his best to avoid anger, he will try his best to avoid greed, he will try his best to avoid the evil things that he knows that these are evil things and they are not good, especially those things that it has not come in the form of traits in himself. It is still in the state of hal and state, as we mentioned earlier. And sometimes, no, he has formed a habit in himself, but he doesn't like that habit. That means that it is not united with him, because he does not like that habit that he has formed. For example, he is niggardly, he doesn't like giving charity. Or for example, he doesn't like to, you know, respect others. All these beautiful characteristics that he should have, he does not have, for example. And he has evil traits, so he wants to change. So he struggles. He struggles by thinking, what should he do? By looking at what the ulama have said, how to go about it when you want to, you know, monitor yourself and change and transform yourself, right? So he struggles his best. This is one way of looking at the whole situation. But then a monotheist, a person who knows that any change that happens in anybody, it is only by Allah's permission and it is only by Allah's tawfiq and the success that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bestows to this person. Never will a person be able to purify himself. However much he starts, you know, struggling, the reason is that if Allah does not want, nothing can happen. So this should be there in his mind. That, all right, we have to struggle. That is the path that we should struggle. لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. That the human being will not have save what he struggles for. But then, this struggle itself also cannot transpire without Allah's assistance, without Allah's help. And if he puts it in his mind that, you know, everything is controlled by Allah, that even, you know, going towards good and refraining from bad is also Allah's bestowal, then he will always ask Allah. And that is when he says, Inni a'udhu bika. When Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam starts saying, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min hayajanil hirs, he's actually telling us indirectly that, you know, I believe that even when I want to leave these evil traits, I cannot do so without Allah's help. And this is what is known as, you know, seeking refuge in a monotheistic way, not in a way whereby a person thinks that, okay, I'm seeking refuge, but you know, I can also work hard and I can also get that position of, you know, being away from these evil traits. No, we cannot. In fact, there is a very beautiful statement that we now and again are taught to recite, and sometimes we also recite partly in prayer. We say, La hawla وَلَا قُوَّةَ إِلَّا بِاللَّهِ الْعَلِيِّ الْعَظِيمِ. This is that monotheistic expression that we should have, that there is no state, لَا حَوْلَ وَلَا قُوَّةَ, nor is there any power, إِلَّا بِاللَّهِ, save by Allah's power and, you know, through Allah's strength. I don't have anything of my own. When a person understands this and prays, it makes a great difference. And that is when he sees that there is a change in him. And this is how we have to supplicate. So this is one of the noteworthy points that we should understand while we say, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, a very important thing also is to know what this is all about, the evil traits that Imam starts enumerating and starts seeking refuge of Allah from them. The first thing that he mentions is Hayajanul Hirs. What is Hayajanul Hirs? Hayajan, the word Hayajan, the root word Hayajan, Ha, Ye, and Jim. If you look at authoritative lexicographers, they talk of what is, it is known as Thawran. Thawran means, you know, something that is stirred up, it is aroused, it is evoked, it is provoked. These are the things that we can say when it comes to Hayajan, Hayajanul Hirs. That Hirs, and Hirs is, Alaqa Shadida, or something that you desire extremely. And we call it greed, for example. Especially when we talk of Hirs, we talk of, you know, greed with regard to the things of the world. That is what is reprimanded and it is blameworthy. Otherwise, if you look at the word Hirs, it is also used for positive things. You know, like for example, if a person has extreme desire for the good of another, so that is a positive thing. Inshallah, we will look at this phrase in detail and also look at it from the Quranic point of view also, so that we understand it properly. We come to the end of the program. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را یا
The Limelight. President Joe Biden has been interviewed in a special counsel investigation into classified documents found at his office and home. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden has been interviewed by the Office of Special Counsel Robert Hur, who is overseeing an inquiry related to the discovery of documents with classification markings at Joe Biden's Wilmington home and former private office. Ian Sams, the spokesman for the White House Counsel's Office, said in a statement that the interview was conducted at the White House over 2 days, on Sunday, 8th of October, and Monday, 9th of October. It was concluded on Monday, he said. Ian Sams went on to state that the President and White House are cooperating with the probe. Other questions were referred to the Justice Department. Multiple sources confirmed to CBS News that Robert Hur personally conducted the interview with the President. According to a person familiar with the investigation, the special counsel's interview with Joe Biden had been scheduled for weeks. Robert Herr is the second special counsel appointed to oversee an investigation into sensitive documents after Jack Smith was tapped to take over the probe into former President Donald Trump's handling of sensitive government documents. Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Robert Herr just hours after the White House confirmed the discovery of a second set of documents in a garage at Joe Biden's Delaware residence. Merrick Garland said the government first learned about the initial group of documents that were found in an office that Mr. Biden used upon leaving the vice presidency last November, and the FBI began an assessment of potential mishandling of classified information just several days later. Attorney General Merrick Garland revealed the documents in Joe Biden's garage were subsequently discovered on 20th of December. A spokesperson for the president's personal attorney, Bob Bauer, has declined to comment. NBC News has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden was interviewed as part of the investigation into his handling of classified documents being led by special counsel Robert Herr, the White House has confirmed. A person familiar with the matter said Robert Herr personally led the interview. In a statement on Monday night, 9th of October, White House spokesman Ian Sam said the voluntary interview was conducted over 2 days, and Sunday 8th and Monday 9th of October. As we have said from the beginning, the President and the White House are cooperating with this investigation, and, as it has been appropriate, we have provided relevant updates publicly, being as transparent as we can, consistent with protecting and preserving the integrity of the investigation. A person familiar with the matter said the interview was scheduled several weeks ago. When asked about his plans to sit for an interview in the investigation as he was visiting Lake Tahoe in August, Joe Biden told reporters, "There is no such request and no such interest." A spokesperson for Robert Herr and Joe Biden's personal attorney, Bob Bauer, declined to comment. The interview raises the possibility that the special counsel's investigation may be nearing its end, nearly 9 months after Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Robert Herr to oversee a probe into Biden's handling of classified documents. The White House said in January that documents with classified markings were uncovered at Joe Biden's Delaware home and at Washington office he used after he was vice president. Robert Herr was the U.S. attorney for Maryland during the Trump administration. NBC News has reported that Biden and Herr had been in negotiations over the terms of an interview, including details about the interview's timing and location, as well as the scope of the questions, two people familiar with the matter confirmed in August. Joe Biden's classified documents case has unfolded as his predecessor, former President Donald Trump, faces charges that he mishandled documents, including allegations that he told a property manager at his Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida to delete security video. During his presidential campaign, Donald Trump has sought to liken his handling of documents to Joe Biden's. Biden's aides have pushed back against the comparison, saying Biden promptly returned all the classified documents to the government when they were discovered in his office and then voluntarily allowed federal authorities to search his properties for additional materials. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden over the last 2 days participated in a voluntary interview with special counsel Robert Herr as part of his classified documents investigation, the White House confirmed on Monday, 9th of October. The president has been interviewed as part of the investigation being led by special counsel Robert Herr, White House Counsel's Office spokesperson Ian Sams wrote in a statement on Monday. The voluntary interview was conducted at the White House over 2 days, Sunday 8th and Monday 9th of October, and the interview concluded on Monday. As we have said from the beginning, the President and the White House are cooperating with this investigation, and as it has been appropriate, we have provided relevant updates publicly, being as transparent as we can, consistent with protecting and preserving the integrity of the investigation. Ian Sams referred additional questions to the Justice Department.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. My first question is that, well, what are the things that make the prayers void?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, this is a question which needs a lengthy answer because there are different things which make the prayer void. For example, if one of the conditions of which are required for the validity of wudu is not fulfilled, then the prayer becomes void. And there are many things which are required for wudu. For example, when you make wudu, you should make wudu with pure water. And then the water should not be usurped. And then, of course, you should not have past wind during the wudu, because mm-hmm. if these are those things which invalidate wudu, if they are not fulfilled, if they are not met, then the prayer becomes void. Okay, for example, if your cloth is not clean, it's mm-hmm. not pure. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're wearing clothes, it's pure, but it's raspy, it's usurped. You have obtained it illicitly from mm-hmm. somewhere, or you've just got it from somewhere, stolen it, for example. Then your prayer becomes void because you cannot pray with a stolen clothing. Mm. And then this is a general answer I'm giving. Otherwise, if you go into details, each and every issue that we discuss or we bring up in this episode might take time.
It has multiple scenarios.
Yes, scenarios, sure. Then, of course, if, for example, an incident happens, like, for example, you pray and then you, for example, during the prayer, you pass wind or you stop having the niyya, because niyya should be maintained throughout mm-hmm. the prayer. Your prayer becomes void. Or maybe you're showing off to other people while praying and your prayer becomes void. Or maybe you are crying for worldly purposes.
Yes.
Because you have lost your, for example, car or something, you just cry during prayer. This is crying for worldly things. Mm. So your prayer becomes void. And of course, like then, this is listed if you counted it's number two in the list of things which invalidate the prayer.
Right.
Number three, if you, for example, pray with your back behind towards the Qibla, mm-hmm. not with your face towards the Qibla, your prayer becomes void. And then while praying, if you start speaking with someone, like you are speaking with someone as if you are not praying, mm-hmm. then your prayer becomes void, because talking, laughing, giggling, you know, and all of these things make your prayers void.
What about crying?
Crying, of course, if you're crying out of fear for of God, because you think you have not fulfilled your duty towards Allah, you think you're not someone, an obedient person, fearing God's persecution, God's punishment, mm-hmm. then that's not going to affect your prayer. Mm-hmm. There's no problem. There's no objection to you crying for other worldly purposes. Mm-hmm. But if you cry for worldly purposes, then your prayer definitely becomes void. Now, again, the scholars have said that, okay, if one of the conditions, very necessary conditions, is to offer your prayers with your hands on your sides, okay? And this is a disputed subject, and not among the scholars, but among Shia scholars, but among Sunni Shia scholars, okay? For example, the Sunnis, they fold their hands, they put the right hand on their left hand, and they put the entire hands folded on their stomachs. Mm-hmm. We, the Shia Muslims, believe that folding hands is not allowed, and it will make the prayer void, because it was not mentioned anywhere or not practiced by the Prophet in during his time. It was just done by the second caliph. He initiated this practice, and he did not have the right to do so, of course. So if a Shia Muslim folds his hand while praying, his prayer is affected, his prayer is made null and void. And then again...
Let me actually stop you there for a short break, and sure. Then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about the prayer based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, Sheikh Javid, you were talking about those invalidating agents, right?
Or yes.
Those things that invalidate the obligatory prayer.
Prayers, yes. I was saying that, folding hands is not permissible under any circumstances, except when you are practicing taqiyya, You, for example, you live in a predominantly, let's say, Wahhabi or Sunni Muslim country, fearing death or maybe fearing loss of property or something.
Yes.
So, in order to safeguard yourself or your property or your owner and prevent any kind of damage, you practice taqiyya. Taqiyya means to hide your belief and act in the way the other Muslims act. So this is what taqiyya means. And so if you are doing taqiyya, folding hands is not a problem. And even doing sajda on something which is not allowed for sajda, like doing sajda on a piece of cloth, or on a prayer mat made of wool, made of cotton, made of things like this,
yes,
will not affect your prayer because you are excused. And then, as I said, of course, crying, laughing, and speaking with other people, these are the things which make the prayer worth. And then, for example, there are other acts, like if you are praying and in the middle of the prayer you start jumping up or down or clapping your hands, doing other acts, like for example you're moving left and right, that these acts will make your prayer definitely white. And of course, eating and drinking make your prayer white. You have no right whatsoever to eat while praying, to drink a glass of water while praying, because you are praying, you are standing in front of God, and you must be doing what you are supposed to do. You should be praying, not eating, not drinking. And then there are doubts which invalidate the prayer. Of course, we have many, many doubts, some of which are valid, some of which are, should be ignored, and some of which obviously renders the prayer white. Of course, when it comes to doubts, we need to dedicate time to the doubts, because this is not the right time to speak about the doubt. There are different scenarios, about the doubts. And of course, it's one of the most difficult parts of the prayer, because usually you forget what to do when you face a doubt during prayer.
Okay.
Now, then adding to the prayer and reducing, omitting something from the prayer, if you add to the prayer what is not part of the prayer, it's called bid'ah, okay? Mm. For example, you recite a verse on your own accord or doing something, adding something to the prayer which is not part of the prayer, which is absolutely forbidden. No matter what you are adding, maybe you try to add a verse of the Quran, or you want to add a dua, which is not a part of the dua itself, is okay.
Yes.
But the prayer has its own format, it has its own, you know, special zikr or recitations. And of course, it does not accept any addition or omission. So we should not add anything to the prayer.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Well, I enjoyed talking with you as always. And thank you very much for listening to the program Islamic Laws, in which we try to delve into some of the things that make the prayers void based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you, Rasulullah.
We seek refuge from Satan the cursed. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Like Muhammad from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Mousavi, and what we do in this program is to listen to certain characteristics and traits of our Holy Prophet's conduct, behavior, way of life, or the best examples for Muslims as well as other people to follow. This episode of Like Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam is about Salatul Rahim, or observation of the relatives. The word Sala in Arabic means to connect or to stay in touch, and Rahim, which literally means